powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
Mike, do you remember when Brandon Marshall was a member of the Seahawks?
Yes.
If you look up
barely.
If you look up his stats,
like one catch, four drops.
It's something like that. He only appeared in a handful of games, but believe it or not, today he's making Seahawk news in a weird way. He was on FS1 with our old buddy Nick Wright's show, First Things First. He had this to say about Russell Wilson's relationship with Doug Baldwin.
I was able to sit there last year and I seen Doug Baldwin. Doug Baldwin, one of my favorite receivers, all-time competitor. He's a fierce leader. But that dynamic was interesting to me. I felt like Doug Baldwin didn't let Russell Wilson be Russ and be great. You know, it was like, oh, what about this? What about that? And I'm looking, I'm like, I played with, excuse my language, I'm sorry, but I played with 17 quarterbacks. 17 quarterbacks. You have a guy that's a Hall of Fame quarterback. There's nothing to complain about.
My man, Brandon Marshall, I take back all those things I said about all those drops. Finally, somebody who has come out of that program says it like they should. This is the argument we've been making forever and ever, and I'm going to go ahead and say what I've been saying throughout this year. One of the reasons Russell Wilson has been playing at an MVP level, in my opinion, is that he doesn't have Doug Baldwin watching everything he does and criticizing him all the time. Boy, how is Russ ever able to do it without the accountability of Doug sending out all of his awful plays to everybody and making sure everyone knows everything Russell did wrong all the time? Brandon Marshall's absolutely right. Doug did not have that much to complain about. Maybe at the beginning when Russ was a rookie and he was just sort of learning like all rookie quarterbacks are. But over the last 5 years, I could never understand what it was that was so problematic to Doug. At some point, and I think you hear it from Brandon Marshall, it wasn't about the play on the field. It has to be personal.
It definitely gets to a different point because you look at it in terms of a relationship standpoint and knowing those two guys, they're both fierce competitors. They love to win and they want to be great, right? And so when you look at it from that standpoint, just that standpoint alone, you would think that relationship would be exceptional, mm-hmm. and that they would get along on another level. And I think that they had a unique, different relationship, yin and yang, but there was definite tension at all times, and it was, you could feel it.
Hey, one of the things I've always believed about Doug Baldwin, and remember, I think he's a fantastic player, and when I talk about some of the ways he treated Russ, it's really just specific to that. I think Doug's a smart guy. I like a lot of the things he has done off the field. He's charitable. I think he's kind. I think he's a good person. And he's an incredible competitor and a fantastic wide receiver. So I have a lot of positive things to say about him. I think Doug believes that he's different from all the other diva wide receivers, and he's not.
Doesn't every receiver have to believe that?
I don't know. I feel like Chad Ochocinco and T.O., some of those guys just leaned in to being divas. Like, yeah, that's who I am. What are you going to do? Deal with it. I think Doug truly believes and wants everyone else to believe that he's not a diva, that he's not like all those other wide receivers, that he is a team guy, that he doesn't care whether or not he gets the ball, when in fact, especially in the system he played in, where wide receivers didn't get a lot of chances, he wanted to make sure that every one of those chances went to him, that any time Russ missed him, it was a federal offense that deserved prosecution. And I just don't think he was able to see the forest for the trees for those reasons.
But he was different from those wide receivers because those guys were very public about it, and Doug wasn't. The only things we know about Doug Baldwin and his contempt for Russ are what we sort of hear through the grapevine.
And I don't think he has contempt for Russ. I think they had kind of a complicated relationship. I don't think that Doug Baldwin hates Russell Wilson. Like, I don't really like that narrative. I don't think it's that simple. I think it's hard when you consider their age range, right? They're peers. This isn't a rookie receiver that came in with someone who was already established as an all-pro quarterback. This is someone who came in at the same time, and you're trying to hold each other accountable, and then maybe that relationship grows with some tension just because the quarterback in itself as a position is treated,
you know, differently. What? That's a really good point.
Thank you, Tom.
You can make that same point. This is something I've actually never understood about Richard Sherman and Doug Baldwin. Those guys came into the league like a year before him. I feel like there's this narrative where Russell came into the league like 5 years after them, and they had so much seniority over him.
No, he's younger.
They can't. What?
No, I'm agreeing with you.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
that narrative
right,
wrong.
But only by a year. Like this idea that Richard Sherman and Doug Baldwin had any right to be pushing Russell Wilson around
and,
at all
and yet,
is ludicrous.
I don't think it was as an older player. I think it was as a peer. It's not even Tyler Lockett coming in 2015 with some. Well, Tyler Lockett's just a different kind of person,
Stacey,
anyways.
Here's the thing, though. I think you're right. It's not fair to use the word hate or even disdain or anything.
No.
I don't think there's any hatred.
I think it's complicated.
It is. But at the root of it was a guy that didn't treat Russell, I think, very well and had no problems consistently leaking a lot of his feelings for Russ. You're right, Tom. He didn't go on the air and just start ripping the guy publicly, and I guess he gets some credit for that. Instead, he just hid behind his words and let them leak out there without putting his name on them. I don't know if that's better or worse.
Well, he has plausible deniability in that
well,
sense.
Well, good for him. He's
right.
Got, except that he doesn't. And now you hear it from one of his teammates at the time who's finally willing to come out and say, no, let me tell you how it really was. Doug was ridiculously hard on him for no reason.
And part of that.
And Doug's argument, hold on. Doug's argument was always, well, he needs it. He needs me to hold him accountable because nobody else will. Well, somehow, some way, Russell's managed to play well this year without the great accountability of Doug Baldwin breathing down his neck all the time. Why is that? Oh, maybe he's actually freed up. Who was just telling me about the importance of the word confidence? Somebody's just giving me a whole spiel on how important it is. He said, there is no better aphrodisiac than confidence. Now, he was talking about in a business setting, so I think it was okay. But if you think about your own life, confidence is as important as anything. When you feel confident, when you feel like the people around you, your teammates, your show co-hosts, your co-workers, whoever it may be, when you feel like they believe that you belong, how much better are you?
I learned this from Tyra Banks.
I believe that.
She totally believes in this.
She also says the confidence is the great aphrodisiac.
Exactly.
Right? It is. Somehow Russell is able to do all of this better with a little bit of extra confidence, I believe, without having Doug and Richard and all these guys judging and whispering and leaking every single mistake he's ever made.
I'm not really sure that he's played that much better this year. We've been saying for years that he's played at an MVP level. To Russell Wilson, and Jake, maybe you can back me up on this. I don't think Sherman or Baldwin or any of those guys matter to him. If any of the stuff that he really believes in and preaches works for him, I don't think that stuff matters to him. I think he looks right past it.
Well, I think it matters to him, Tom. Here's the difference, though.
But he plays right through it.
But eventually he had to respond.
Did his performance ever suffer?
Yeah, but eventually he had to put it in writing.
He doesn't let it get to him. That's the difference. That is the thing that he's having to overcome, though.
Yeah,
most quarterbacks in this league and just in general in life, if you have your teammates constantly, you know, throwing darts and arrows at you in the locker room or behind the scenes, maybe you're not publicly, but doing it the way that Sherman did it at different times or however it was,
it blows
that
up.
That would break most quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Russell, for whatever reason, and this is one of the things that I had to really learn and appreciate about him. Because he is different. His approach is different. And having to learn him and what he's about and how he goes about his business, that was something that I was extremely impressed by. That he just was somehow able to block out a lot of that stuff and just continue to focus on the task at hand and just continue to play and have, you know, belief in himself and still go out and love those guys. Mm-hmm. And still, every single time they went on the field, him and Doug had that, you know, boxing routine that he would still go up to Richard Sherman and, you know, still love on him and you know, try and in the heat of the moment, you know, encourage him. Those are the interesting things. I think for Doug and Russell's relationship, I've had relationships, special relationships with receivers, and there is a special, unique bond between quarterback and receiver where usually iron sharpens iron when you have a true relationship. If I throw a bad ball, I want my relationship to be so good that my receiver can come back and say, that was a crappy ball. I need a better one next time, right? And I can do vice versa. In that particular relationship, there is that, but then it goes to a different level. It goes to somewhere beyond that, and I think that's where there was just this constant tension, and I think it limited I think it limited what could have been.
I think it limited Russell's leadership. It didn't give him space to grow as a leader, Tom. And I think that's where he has taken that step this year, where the offense seems to truly reflect Russell instead of him just being a part of it. It's his offense. He's the one who's not just the trigger man for it, but he's actually, it's built around him the right way. I think even more so than it ever has been. And I think that not having the Doug Baldwins, Richard Shermans, everyone else around gives him the opportunity to do some of that. I also think, Jake, when you talk about that breaking other quarterbacks, I would go so far as say it breaks teams. When there is that level of conflict, that it tends to not just break the quarterback, it tends to blow apart teams. And
2017 is the perfect example of that. In my mind, I think 2017 was a direct reflection of that happening. That season crumbling, yeah, you could point to some injuries, but I think that culture had gotten to a point where it just it needed to be wipe the slate clean and move on and move forward. And that's what John and Pete did, because they saw how toxic it had become, you know, not just because of Russell. I think it was a part of that, but just overall it outgrew its welcome. Mm-hmm. And that's where you see in 2018 and 2019 where the Seahawks currently sit and the massive difference in the locker room.
So if Doug Baldwin wants to join this team today, right? Yeah, you know what? I'm ready to come back. I've been keeping myself in shape. I want to show up for the last 4 or 5 games of the year. You want him on the team?
Do you think if Doug Baldwin joined this team today, not having ever played with Russell Wilson, he would treat him differently?
Yes.
I do too.
He can't get over what Russell was, that he wasn't Marshawn Lynch and that he wasn't, you know. I've always believed they didn't give him a pretty backpack and make him happy one
day. The unique thing is that, you know, with Doug, if he came back in this locker room right now, all the guys in the locker room believe full-heartedly in Russell Wilson.
Right.
And it would be interesting to see how he would approach that. And I think that Doug, in some aspects, really truly respected, loved, and really.
I do too.
So what does Russell say? Let's say John Schneider. This is my hypothetical. John Schneider gets a call from Doug Baldwin and his agent. Hey, I want to come play. I want to come play for the last 4 games. I've been working out. I'm in great shape. And over the couple of weeks, they determine that he's in game shape and he's ready to go. And you're John Schneider, and you go to Pete, and then you go to Russ, and you say, Russ, Doug wants to come back. Do you want him for the stretch run? Does Russell say yes or no?
I think he says yes. I think he's,
really?
Yeah, I do. I know why you would think otherwise. I know why you think otherwise.
If I'm Russ, I say thanks, but no thanks. You can keep it, man. I'm good. I'll keep throwing to the guys I'm throwing to. I've got trust in these guys, even though they fumble and make mistakes and everything. Every other problem they've had with their wide receivers this year. But at least they believe in me, and if I'm Russ, I'd be perfectly content just continuing on.
How out of character would that be for Russell to say something like that?
Behind the scenes, I don't know. I don't know how. I honestly don't know. I know he wouldn't say it publicly, but I don't know what he would do behind the scenes. If you give him a moment of truth and say, hey, do you want Doug on this team, yes or no?
Well, that's why I'm saying all this stuff about Baldwin and how it affects Russell. I mean, I don't think it does. I mean, I either don't know or I can say comfortably that none of it does affect him.
You mean you can't tell if on paper he's like better without Baldwin?
Well, I know he's better with him.
He was great with Baldwin. 2015, they should have gone further into the playoffs than they did. But if you're looking on paper, I'm not attributing it to Baldwin. If you're looking on paper, though, to say, has Russell Wilson improved this year over other years? He absolutely has.
I don't look at it on the field. I look at it from a locker room culture standpoint. That's what I look at it as. So when you're asking me those questions,
this,
I think
this
on
team
the field,
has to look at Doug, it from that standpoint, because it's really all they got.
Right. Doug Baldwin is the guy. He does make a difference on the field. I mean, they were looking into Josh Gordon and Antonio Brown, for goodness sake, for a reason. And Doug Baldwin would help in that aspect with the relationship, all of that. It is more of culturally, does it fit? And I think that's really where the question comes down to. So when you guys are asking about, you know, is Russell's play impacted by it? You know, maybe you can't point to the correlation of, you know, statistically him being better. But I think there's little to no surprise. I don't think this is Doug Baldwin specific.
You don't think
I want to make sure
it helps to not have that nagging voice of you're trying to decide where to go with the ball, and I don't know how quickly these decisions. I know it's in an instant, but if in the back of your mind is always, if I don't throw it to Doug, I'm going to have to hear about it.
But what
if I don't make the perfect pass to the guy on the other side and complete it, I'm going to have to hear about it for, you know, nonstop, and then it's going to be out there, and I made the mistake, and I'm not accounting this and that. Like, eventually I would think it would almost have to weigh on you whether you're the immortal Russell Wilson or not.
Yeah, but that might not have been the original intention. The original intention could have been, like Jake said, this iron sharpens iron,
sure,
with just two very different people, and it didn't maybe turn into the relationship. I think that they still had a lot of respect for each other. I do not think that Doug Baldwin.
The one part that I had a problem with, and that I could have argued all of this with, you know, because Stacey, I agree with you. There's aspects that I agree with you, Salk, on this stuff. The part that really bothered me is that when Doug Baldwin went on, what was it, ESPN First Take, yeah, or whatever, and they asked about Russell Wilson and is he a top five quarterback, and Doug completely skirted around the question.
Couldn't answer it.
To me, he couldn't answer
it. Well, it depends what you mean by elite.
To me, that...
We mean what everybody means, Doug. Russell Wilson.
To me, that showed me a lot in terms of, you know, what he actually thinks of Russell as a quarterback, unfortunately.
Thanks for joining us, Mike.
This is
Thanks,
a fun
Mike.
One. We might have to do a special show just on this. Bring Brock out of retirement or something.
I bet you can't wait.
Talk
for
about
your
Brandon
next
Marshall,
podcast.
Doug. Oh, next week? That's all we're going to do.
Know.
Let's just, we'll build a whole 2 hours on this.
Are you guys surprised at all that we haven't heard more from Doug Baldwin with respect to the Seahawk team? I mean, I know he's been out there doing his thing. God bless him. But I haven't heard him really evaluate what's going on with this team at all. Have you?
No, but I don't anticipate him being that guy.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, I really don't. And a big reason why is because Doug has not only left because of physical reasons, but more so, I think he sees himself doing more. And right now, I mean, he's doing a lot for the community of Renton. He's trying to provide a youth center there.
I'm not saying he should, by the way.
You're saying, do you think we will hear
no,
more?
No, I don't care whether he does or not. I'm asking, are you just surprised that he hasn't?
No.
Okay.
I'm not.
I'm a little surprised that he hasn't been around at all. You know, just to pop in for a practice and to say hi. Mm-hmm. I'm a little surprised by that. But, you know, him talking in the media or him being a big, you know, voice or having any opinion about the Seahawks, to me, it doesn't surprise me at all.
You know what's funny, though? And we talked about this a little bit yesterday. You talk about no George Kittle for San Francisco, no, you know, Adam Thielen for Minnesota. You take any player out of this Seahawk team, current or former, and it doesn't seem to matter. They just keep on winning. I mean, this team may win 13 games.
Isn't that wild? They haven't done that since their Super Bowl year.
Yeah. And would you say that they're even half as talented as they were that year?
No.
That's a crazy thing about football. You could, and maybe, to be fair to the people who think that this team is lucky, maybe that's why they think they're lucky. Because in football, you can end up with 13 wins with a lot of talent. You could end up at 10 wins with a ton of talent and 13 with none. That's just sort of the way the ball bounces sometimes.
I don't know how often you get to 13 wins with no. I think the Seahawks are talented. I get what you're saying.
Think about this. That's going to be a bad example. No, I'll say it anyway. The 05 Steelers at 10-6 had a lot of talent.
Yeah.
Except at quarterback at that time. He became better later. But that team was loaded. I mean, guys like Willie Parker and Hines Ward, defensively Joey Porter. They were a 10-6 team. Seahawks that year were 13-3. Now, I don't mean to say the Seahawks weren't talented then, but you can make the point that maybe the Steelers had a little bit more at the time. You could.
You could make the argument. Also,
I won't.
Controversial take that you just had there.
I know. Now you understand why I didn't want to say it.
No, I do. I do understand that sometimes a schedule can come easier. I think you look at the New England Patriots right now. I think you can absolutely say that about the Patriots this season. And you can make that argument
a lot of
seasons.
Yeah, you
could
say the Seahawks had to play the Dolphins twice a year.
Correct.
Their point differential.
However, it goes outside that one division. Outside of that one division, they haven't had that difficult of a schedule. And, you know, really the only tough teams that they've had to play are the Baltimore Ravens. And they just lost to the Texans. I was shocked about them losing to the Texans. But the Texans are a above-average football team that they played on their schedule. And they weren't able to get it done. And so I look at the Patriots right now, and I think that that is the best example right now that I could come up with. But for the Seahawks, getting it 10-2, and were your example with the Pittsburgh Steelers, we'd have to look at 2005 and see what their division looked like. The NFC West is the hardest division in the NFL right now.
Right now, for sure.
And the fact that they're 10-2 right now, I mean, that's saying a lot.
Look, Arizona's 3-8-1. I'm not sure I want to play them. Kyler Murray is a dangerous quarterback. I know they're not a good team, but do you think that they're just a walk in the park? No.
No, but you don't know what you're going to get out of them.
Right.
I mean, it was shocking to see the Rams, you know, absolutely throttle the Cardinals.
It's weird that the Rams haven't been able to be part of this conversation.
Yeah.
They can get themselves back in it.
They can.
Hopefully not this weekend, but, you know, they can.
They're scratching and clawing, that's for sure.
Right now, what is on tap?
This is What's on Tap with Tom, Jake, and Stacey, brought to you by Tito's Premium Vodka. So, folks, what's on tap?
I may have just completely torpedoed any goodwill we had with our audience by bringing up that 2005 Steelers
thing. I think you're fine.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. It's all right. I don't know if you're breaking.
It's forgivable.
It is forgivable.
I stopped just short of saying that the Steelers were more talented that year than the Seahawks were.
Yes, a couple controversial, major controversial calls.
Yeah, I know. I'm not even going to go there right now. All right.
Yeah.
What's going on tonight? Number 22, Washington basketball, taking on Eastern tonight at 7, and that's going to be on the Pac-12. Is it just the Pac-12 Washington channel, not
yes.
just the Pac-12 network?
Yeah, Loyola Marymount, Colorado got the big horn in there.
What?
I know.
Loyola Marymount and
Colorado
got the main Pac-12 station.
They did.
And UW, who's ranked.
Colorado's also ranked.
Oh, Colorado's ranked. Okay. Yeah. Taking on Eastern on the Pac-12 Washington station. And you can hear the Cougs taking on Idaho at 7 on 710 ESPN Seattle.
It's the Battle of the Palouse, Tom.
Right here.
For the uninitiated.
The Battle of the Palouse out
yeah.
there?
Yeah. Washington State, Idaho.
Who usually wins?
Historically, the Cougs handle that one, but I think they lost last. Ernie Kent didn't do so well. You might be surprised to learn.
I'm not surprised.
No,
in,
you're
in
not.
The least.
No, no. So I think that's over in Moscow at the Kibbe Dome, but that's for football. During basketball, they call it the Cowan Spectrum.
Did you say the Kibbe Dome?
The Kibbe Dome. That's K-I-B-B-I-E.
Okay.
It looks like a knocked over beer can.
Okay, because Kibbe, K-I-B-B-E-H, is a Lebanese dish my mom used to make.
Oh, a little kibbe.
Kibbe.
Well, you got a kibbe dome.
Tommy, you having some kibbe tonight? All right, no more discussion about that. Washington Wednesday's coming up next. Why did Chris Peterson choose to leave right now, just when things were looking great, or bad in this case? 710 ESPN, that's next.
Washington Wednesdays, brought to you by Star Rentals, preferred supplier to the West's best contractors, and by Heritage Distilling Company, makers of BSB Brown Sugar Bourbon.
Hey, something crazy happened last night. Remember yesterday when I said to you guys that the Chris Peterson stepping down didn't get a ton of national coverage?
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, how far behind Dabo Sweeney and Nick Saban is he really? And then when I was driving around last night at probably, I don't know, 9:30 or 10 at night, I heard Freddie Coleman and Ian Fitzsimmons on nationally on ESPN.
Yeah.
What were they talking about? They were talking about
Chris Peterson.
They were talking about a coach stepping down. And I was like, man, I was like, what are the chances they're talking about Chris Peterson right now? Then I heard one of them say his name. I was like, I'll be darned.
Proven wrong.
This actually made national news. They're talking about it at 10:30 at night, West Coast time, by the way. Maybe that's why they were doing it, because they figured people like me would be listening. But lo and behold, they're talking Chris Peterson, and they were saying a lot of the same things that we were. Just the daily, monthly, yearly grind of having to deal with recruiting and things like that. Some guys are cut out for it. Some guys aren't. Now, Chris Peterson did manage to do it between Boise State and UW for how many years? Since 2006. So what, 13, 14 years right there?
Yeah.
That's a long time to do something, to have that kind of sustained success
right.
and not get kicked out the door.
Correct. And absolutely one of the best coaches in college football. And UW is going to miss Chris Peterson. I do think, though, that I'm glad Chris Peterson did this, because I think that he would even say that he might not have been giving his best or being at his best this year. And I'm not saying that that led to losses. I'm not saying that, you know, Chris Peterson, you know, intentionally knew that he was doing that. I think he just looked in the mirror and said, you know what, like, I'm not at the same level of enjoyment coming in every single day that I used to be, that I want to be. And that's not what this program needs. This is not what, you know, I love this place and it deserves more. And I'm glad that he's moving on to the next chapter in his life. And I, whatever he does, he's going to be amazing at it.
I think, but he also...
Oh, no. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think he also seems to have full faith that that's where the program is going. When he was talking about Jimmy Lake, I mean, I believed him. His sentiment mm-hmm. seemed very genuine that he, again, going back to what we were talking about the other day, he doesn't necessarily regret telling younger recruits to come here and now kind of leaving them because he thinks they're in better hands.
Correct.
Because of that.
Yeah. And
do you think they buy that, by the way, the recruits?
I think he implied that, like, even if they don't see it now. So I think there's probably some okay. people that were upset. And yeah. that we're thinking, you know, why are you doing this?
Yeah, you, like the bottom line is that you're running yeah. out of me, but hopefully they'll see that what's to come in the future, there's light at the end of the tunnel.
That was the tone.
Not that long.
That was the tone he had, that like yeah. they might not see it now, but it's true.
There's always going to be fallout from a decision like this, right? Like even their top receiver commit in Jalen McMillan, he decommitted and opened up his commitment because of this news about Chris Peterson. So that's one of those things where you look at it and you sit here and say, okay, are they going to, you know, be able to recapture guys like that? Are they going to be able to get more recruits because Jimmy Lake has a, you know, a flashier personality? But that's the other side of it for Chris Peterson. At Boise State, he got to recruit different types of guys. And it was more of a, hey, this is my way, and you're going to fit into my culture, and you're going to be, and there's not going to be a whole lot of complaining about it. But when you're at the University of Washington, when you're at these Power 5 schools and you're trying to compete at the highest level, you have to go after the 4- and 5-star guys. And I was one of those guys. And you know what their interest is? It's about themselves. It's about, can you put me in the best position to go play in the National Football League, right? And there's a different attitude with those kind of guys and trying to wrangle them. Now you open up the transfer portal and – you know, the whole debacle in terms of the quarterback situation, having to manage Jacob Eason, Jacob Sermon, all of these guys and make them feel welcomed and a part of the program and beloved. I mean, it's just a totally different aspect of college football than it used to be even a couple years ago.
Whatever happened to the era of college football? And I'm not going old man. I want to know when this changed. Like the Bear Bryant era where it was all about just discipline and you're going to work and like, I'm not going to, you know, kiss your
yeah.
your behind at all.
Yeah.
There's still like, coaches like that.
How do they do that, though? Like, isn't it their job now to sell themselves to the kids so that they'll come there? Like,
yes, and constantly, not only
and
not
constantly
only that, but
like reaffirm them.
Yes, like you said, because even the transfer portal, this has opened up a whole nother situation because you didn't used to. Once you kind of got the kids there, they were kind of stuck there.
They were
right?
yours to yes. do with what you want.
Exactly, and so they didn't really have much of a say in that.
And
I would
Leach kind of still has that power.
Yeah, and I would say right now, in terms of the transfer thing, I think that changed probably around 10 years ago. And for me, I was one of those guys that transferred twice. And they were very difficult decisions, but that trend started happening maybe, you know, a couple years before I did it. And so that's kind of where you saw that shift change. But ultimately, for college coaching, the recruiting side of it is nonstop. The dynamics have changed, and you have to have a lot of energy. And you have to sell yourself constantly. And I think that's the part where I think coaches now are, you know, looking at this going, man, do I want to do this every day? And it takes a unique, special guy, you know, I'm not saying Chris Peterson is not a special person. I'm saying this.
It takes a certain mindset. You need to be wired a certain way.
Yes.
Look, there's so many professions out there that I even just driving around, I say to myself, man, to do that, even just to be in politics, like, you got to be wired a certain way to do that. I'm not wired to be doing that. Like, whatever that entails, I can't do that. I can do this. I can do one or two other things. But spending all those hours in recruiting and dealing with the shady side of college football, I mean, let's face it, that's another thing mm-hmm. that's going on here is if you're a certain type of person, you just don't want to deal with that stuff anymore.
Correct. And right? That's where I think NFL jobs are going to be even more highly sought after because you don't have to deal with that stuff. So you might see a lot of good coaches, maybe walk away from college football here in the next little bit and end up trying to go on the professional level, or even the XFL might benefit from that because they're not having to deal with that stuff either.
They're
not, but
I mean, can they pay the same as...
They can't, but I'm just saying, you know, for some of those guys, it might be a benefit. It might be a nice change of pace to be able to walk away from it. So, I don't know. I think that's where you see Bob Stoops. You see some of these other guys that are participating in this league. They do have, you know, some perks to it.
Is there something you wanted to say about high school football?
Yeah.
High school football?
Yeah. So state championships are coming up this weekend, and the thing I guess I want to get off my chest is it's just unfortunate to me that you look at high school football. It is such a special time in this state that for a long time we high school kids dreamed of going to the Tacoma Dome, and it was always about, hey, one day we're going to play at the Tacoma Dome. That's the goal. And this year the WIAA had changed it, and now they've changed it to where they've separated all of the divisions. So 4A and 1A are playing in one venue, 3A and 2A are playing in one venue, and the lower classifications are playing in another one. And now, so instead of going to the Tacoma Dome and being able to watch and celebrate all of high school football, now you're at just random high schools. Now you're not even at a special venue. You're not even at Seattle Memorial. You're not at CenturyLink. You're not, and WIAA said that when they were making these changes, it would be the betterment for the players and for the fans, and they sorely missed on this. They ruined the opportunity. They have taken the opportunity to create a special environment for the athletes and for the fans and for the parents involved in all of this, because now you're having some of the best state championships. O'Day, Eastside Catholic, is going to be an amazing game. They're playing at Spark Stadium, which is, it's not a bad high school field, but it's not where the state championship should be playing. And I think that that is something that the WIAA needs to look in the mirror, and they need to change, and they need to figure out what they're going to do to fix this, because I think that they have fallen very, very short and have over-promised, under-delivered for these athletes here in the state of Washington.
So all these championships were at one time played, all these games were played at the Tacoma Dome.
Now they're being played
just on the home fields or just random stadiums?
Random stadiums. So stadiums that can kind of hold capacity.
Yep.
The 4A game, I know at Mount Tahoma, High School is going to overflow that whole thing. I think that they really, really missed the mark on this whole thing, and they've got to figure it out.
All right, I know we got to run, but what was the reason that they gave for this?
Well, it was a money issue, and the Tacoma Dome also, they changed their venue, the seating, more predicated to a concert venue. So it did need to change. It did need to happen. But they needed to find a much better venue, and they needed to find a venue where they could have every single game played there on Friday and Saturday like they had traditionally, so that everybody in the state could come and enjoy that experience. And now it just simply isn't the same environment, same experience.
It's because of my guy. It's because of Roger Waters and Pink Floyd changing around the Tacoma Dome for their big show. Sorry, I'll apologize on behalf of them. We sum it up next on Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
It's time to sum it up with Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Shot clock turned off.
The final word on everything that matters today in sports. Brought to you by Zone In CBD.
Step back!
You know what the weirdest thing is? And I'm not really sure when people stop doing this, but when I was in college, I guess I was 18 when I went off to college, I went to Indiana. If you're walking around campus and you see a dude wearing his high school varsity Letterman jacket, is that what you call it?
Yeah.
The Letterman jacket?
Like, yes.
Around the college campus. Isn't that really, like, tacky and dorky to do? Like,
yeah.
You don't do that, right?
No offense.
Correct, yes.
Okay.
You leave that Letterman jacket in your closet the moment you don't go to high school anymore.
Right. Now, it's funny because Stacey and I were joking in the break a few breaks ago about that Seattle Dragons XFL uniform, because I was saying how it reminds me kind of like of the U,
mm-hmm.
right? You know how when they do the introductions on NBC on the late game on Sunday, they have all the players who they say where they came from and all the guys who played at Miami. They
yes.
go, the U?
Yes.
I've noticed like over the last couple of years, some of them are identifying their high schools where they went, not even their college. And it's got me wondering, like, for a professional athlete to identify his high school, Like, at what point do you stop looking at your high school football experience as being, like, the thing?
I don't know. Well, the thing, I think, for
a professional. Never.
Never, ever.
Check
Spartans
out the rings.
Forever.
Some people,
for life.
Some people peak early, man. I mean, like, I peaked when I was 23. You know, it's been all downhill ever since. I don't know about you. Or used to. You grew up in SeaTac, right?
I grew up in SeaTac, Washington. I went to Tyee High School, where I also lettered.
Did you? In what?
I lettered in academics, swim, and band.
You lettered in academics?
Yeah, I lettered in three different categories.
Wow, that's impressive.
Thank you.
I didn't know you could do that. Now, would you go around bragging about that now?
Absolutely, but part of that is because I felt like my school was underrepresented and the community didn't get a lot of attention. So I always mention that I'm from SeaTac and went to Tyee.
Okay.
I like saying it.
Well,
go ahead.
The 509 said, Jake, please wear your Letterman jacket one day on the show.
Do it. Do you have it still?
Heck yeah.
Jake,
I have.
You have
Does
to
it
do
fit?
It.
Of course I have it.
Yeah, you never get rid of it. I'm not saying I'm not suggesting that. By the way, the sweatshirt you've been wearing today, it's from Super Bowl 51. Out of the corner of my eye, as I've been looking and talking to you and Stacey, it kind of looks like a Letterman's jacket.
Does it?
Yeah. Like, it's kind of been looking that way the whole show to me.
Anyway,
did I ever letter in anything? I don't think so. But if I did, would I be talking about it now? Yeah, I suppose so. And when you bring up that experience of being able to play in a state final at a place like the Tacoma Dome, where you grow up knowing that, hey, that's where I want to get to. Like, you're a high school kid, you may know that you're not going to play in college or you're not going to be able to play professionally. Some people probably think otherwise, but
correct.
To know that that may be the pinnacle of your experience with this is a great thing. I think that is awesome, and it's a shame that they've moved that out of there.
Yeah, it's a shame that it's moved out of there, but it was for a reason. I mean, the Tacoma Dome raised the prices on them, not only for football, but also for wrestling. And those are the two main events that happen there. But the biggest issue that I have with it is, okay, you have to move it, but let's find a better solution.
Yeah.
You can't tell me that, I know the University of Washington has a different approach, but you can't tell me that the Seahawks in particular wouldn't want to do some, you know, program with the WIAA and have CenturyLink be a part of it.
Could they sell that out?
No, they couldn't sell it out. But you can't tell me that Seattle Memorial wouldn't be a good option, because now you're being able to, once again, still keep the tradition of being able to play Friday, Saturday, being able to have all the state championship games played at that one venue, and be able to make it a great experience where you could buy a ticket and you can watch multiple games. The other part of it is that they're keeping the same ticket prices for the state championship game as these other venues. You're only able to watch two games.
That's ridiculous.
Right? So there's just some aspect of it is they're ruining the experience for a particular player. No one's going to be sitting there saying, let's go play at Spark Stadium. Let's go play at Mount Tahoma, you know, and that's going to be the rallying cry. Just before recruiting even happened, the purest thing, high school, the purest thing was saying, all right, let's get to the Tacoma Dome, right? And whatever that new thing is going to be, you got to make it a special experience for these young kids.
Stacey, was there a place where, would you say diving or swimming?
Swimming.
Was there a place for swimmers where they always dreamed of swimming?
Maybe the Olympics.
No.
No.
For the state finals,
No, no.
Nothing like that?
I don't think so. Not that I can think of.
What kind of crowds are you guys drawing over there?
It depends where you go to school. When I was in high school, the big teams were, like, Mount Rainier was really good and Hazen was really good. So when you went there, the crowd was okay.
And I wonder what they're doing. I don't know.
I
don't know what they're doing for the high school wrestling championships. I'd be interested to know where they're doing that at. But that's a huge thing, too. Like, that's a really cool event that they do.
Wrestling
mats all over the place, spotlights, the whole deal. I mean, it's a pretty cool deal.
Wrestling was a pretty big deal back in Connecticut, too. Did I tell you about my wrestling experience?
No. I got to hear about this.
Are you going to tell us now?
You
have to say it now.
I wrestled my freshman year. My parents made me do it. I wrestled at, like, I think it was 103, and I was terrible. I ended up getting injured early on in the year, so I was out most of the year. But when I came back, I just got absolutely destroyed. And my poor father, having to sit there in the stands watching his son just get the tar beat out of him, he pulled me aside after a couple of matches. He said, Tommy, you don't have to do this anymore.
Oh! I like the way you said it. You know what? You don't have to do this anymore if you don't want to.
Yeah.
Let's go get McDonald's.
And you said, okay.
I was like, that was like the answer to my prayer.
Did you quit?
Yes.
I quit. Did you have to go talk to the coach?
Yeah, I did.
Tough call. Tough conversation.
Not really. I couldn't wait
not
to tell
you
him.
To quit that
did you go up and say, my dad said it's okay to quit?
No,
so.
I just said, I'm not doing this anymore.
Was he like,
I'm out of here.
Audi 5000 pops. Tom, Jake, and Stacy, 710 ESPN Seattle.